industrial governmental complex in Israel. They all have involvement in the development of AI and...
Well, I mean, I think it's not just that. I mean, as the Special Rapporteur on Culture Rights, I wrote something on copyright, etc., which is precisely about part of that was how the corporate sector is funding academics and academia, and it is influencing and shifting and modulating what research gets done and what research gets published and how it's published. So that I already knew. I just didn't realize how many of the universities actually have links with or support from the armament industry, which is being quite surprising. I haven't looked into it in great detail, but I know it's there.
Farida Shaheed, do you have a vision of how Gaza, and we've not talked about the West Bank, I mean, it's not all that different in the West Bank. I mean, they're not bombing universities in the West Bank, but schools like Al-Quds and Beer Tzeit have been, you know, routinely assaulted by the Israeli military for years and years and years, arresting students, you know, seizing property. Do you have a vision for how the educational sector can recover and be reborn in Gaza following the end of this conflict? Do you have a vision of how we might proceed and recover from scholasticide?
I do not have a thought-out vision of how this could be done. I think the first step to that is really giving the space and the voice to the Palestinians. And I do think, however, in all of this, I think one of the things that has to be clear is that the Palestinian diaspora has to be brought in, and they have to also help. Because if the cultural heritage and knowledge and everything has been destroyed inside Gaza, there are Palestinians outside and others, of course, who may have some of that knowledge, who may have some of that history, who would be able to go. But I think it's up to the Palestinian people to try and understand what would work best for them. I think the international community has to listen to them and not try and impose whatever they think is the best way forward. Often when you have things which are imposed from outside, they don't last very long. But it's going to be a very long process. As I said here, when we had the Taliban wreaking havoc in one of our provinces, when I went back and spoke to the young men, and it was a young man who said this, so young man, talking to the youth there, and I said, what do you want? And he said, our ability to think has been destroyed. So seeing so much horror, you have to build alternative reference points. Somebody said the other day, you know, but we see all these pictures of Palestinian children playing and video clips, and, you know, they're playing. And I said, well, two things. That's just the resilience of people, including, and hats off to the Palestinian children for being so resilient. But did anyone check what they're playing at? Because I think one of the things that happens is that you have to provide people alternative reference points from that war and that horror to be able to move forward. And I know, for instance, I've been involved at some level with the Landscapes of Hope. The Landscapes of Hope have been working with Syrian refugees who've suffered trauma as well. So the artistic, creative part of the human being, I think that's what we have to bring together. And I think we just do not give enough attention. It's all, okay, how good are you at math and how good are you at X, Y, and Z and competencies? But education has to be holistic. And that includes helping to flourish the human creativity. And as I said, I would like to see the Palestinians take the lead rather than us telling them what the vision should be. They have to come in and explain to us what they need and what help they need.
And Palestinian kids love to go to school. I've seen them. I've seen the joy in their eyes. And I was watching some footage on Al Jazeera of some kids in Al-Mawazi, maybe, one of these evacuation zones under a tent in school. And they were shouting and raising their hands, and the teacher was teaching them. And I was thinking, this teacher, she's the salt of the earth, the most noble of the most noble. And then the kids were clearly happy and enjoying themselves, and this is what they need. And maybe this is what Israel wants to destroy.
I think it is. I think Israel wants to destroy all sense of hope, creativity, but hope, because I think that's what it's about, what my future would be. But one of the pictures that is iconic to me is just a photograph. It's not a video. It's, you know, action of that neighborhood. And in the rubble, there are three children, and each of the three children, who must be aged, I think, 5, 6 to maybe 10, there are three children, and they're all sitting there with books. They're all sitting there with scraps of books or whatever it is, but they're reading. So, yes, there's a thirst for learning. There's a thirst for coming together and, yeah, flourishing. And so somehow we need to find the ways to make that happen.
Farida Shaheed, thank you so much for joining me on the Green Planet Monitor.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
Farida Shaheed is the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Education. We'll link to Shaheed and her colleague's statement about scholasticide in Gaza at greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're checking that out, please subscribe. With your help, we'll keep delivering stories about Earth systems, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. Getting an elementary, secondary, or university education in Palestine these days is one thing. Doing top-drawer scientific research is another. That's what Youssef Najjare has been doing for quite a number of years under Israeli military occupation and apartheid. It's not been easy. Najjare is a molecular pharmacologist in the faculties of Bethlehem and Al-Quds universities in occupied Palestine. I've spoken and hung out with Youssef on a host of occasions, most recently this past May. Here's a conversation of ours from back in 2022, in the midst of COVID, and in the wake of Israeli government legislation clamping down on visits by foreign academics to Palestinian campuses, and academics like Youssef Najjare. From Youssef, we'll segue to Palestine's ambassador to the United Nations, the ever-eloquent Riyad Mansour, National Court of Justice back in February on the opening day of hearings on the legal consequences of Israel's prolonged occupation of Palestine.
They just want to control and to have the right to approve or not for any academician coming to my university, when and how many and to which department this academician is coming.
And they can only come from a certain period of time.
And a very limited time, very limited period of time. I'm at the end, let me put it this way. The way I understand this, Israel is actually, there is a secret word for occupier. The one who wants to occupy actually is looking for the means to control. They want to control your movement. They want, and that's it. That's the whole issue of occupier occupation is about. Who is controlling what? So they want to control your movement. They want to control your connection. They want to control the movement of your friends, your visitors, your guests. Everything should be under their own eye.
And they want to control your development.
Exactly. At the end, they want to control you. It's at the end, the secret word is, we are the controller. We control you. We control your future. We control your development. We control your progress. We control your even aspirations. We just control you. For this, I'm against. Who are you?
Mr. President, honorable members of the court, I think you have in your folders the full text or the original text of my speech, but I tried, in light of the lateness of the hour, I shortened it further. As we gather here in this great hall of justice, in the Peace Palace, we are reminded of these simple words: peace through justice, peace through law. The General Assembly brought the question of Palestine before the court because our people, the law, and peace are in jeopardy. The clarity of the law as it pertains to this question is only matched by the evidence of its continued breach by Israel. As we address you today, this breach has reached its most inhumane levels. More than 2 million Palestinians in Gaza are being pushed all the way to the border, to the very brink. Palestinian children, women, and men consumed by disease, despair, destruction, and death, which are spreading like wildfire. In the rest of occupied Palestine, settlers rampage and terrorize. No village, town, or city, no community, no sanctity spared. Israeli leaders no longer feel the need to hide their intentions. They speak openly of getting rid of the Palestinian people one way or another. They defy the law, and the law is barely fighting back. For Palestine, the law continues to be only a measure of the severity of breaches. Rather than a catalyst for action and accountability. What does international law mean for Palestinian children in Gaza today? It has protected neither them nor their childhood. It has not protected their families or communities. It has not protected their lives or limbs, their hopes or homes. We are a proud and resilient people that has endured more than its share of agony. It is so painful to be Palestinian today. How could we be just subjected to such loss and injustice, such lawlessness and humiliation, time and time again? What does international law mean for a nation bestowed with inherent rights but enjoying none? It took 75 years for the UN to commemorate the Nakba, our violent dispossession, displacement from our land, and denial of our rights and existence. And we are seeing it happen all over again. Massacres, millions forcibly driven towards the unknown, tents, starvation, deprivation, and dehumanization, enabling one people to impose all of this on another. Palestinians under occupation in Israel as refugees and in the diaspora, all they ask for are their rights and to live in freedom and dignity in their ancestral land. For 75 years, the Palestinian people have faced attempts to push them out of geography and indeed out of history. And it goes on, and it will go on forever, unless and until international law is upheld, unless and until the unlawful occupation of Palestine ends. Mr. President, members of the court, our right to self-determination was recognized in the context of a mandate 100 years ago, yet simultaneously negated by the actions of the mandatory power. The question of Palestine was passed on to the United Nations at the time of its inception and has remained on its agenda ever since. In the aftermath of the Nakba, the United Nations admitted Israel to membership while emphasizing the need for it to respect Resolution 181 and 194 concerning the Palestinian state and the territory allotted to it, the international status of Jerusalem, and the right of return of Palestine refugees. Israel recognized these resolutions to secure its admission, only to renege on them as soon as it was admitted. Ever since Israel became convinced that the new realities imposed by the use of force would override the obligations arising from the rule of international law without any consequences. In 1967, the Security Council emphasized the inadmissibility of the acquisition of territory by war and called for the withdrawal of Israeli armed forces from territories occupied in the recent conflict. Instead, Israel started to colonize the land. The General Assembly in Resolution 3005 called upon Israel to desist the annexation of any part of the occupied territories and the establishment of Israeli settlements on those territories and the transfer of parts of an alien population into the occupied territories. Instead, Israel formalized its annexation of Jerusalem and other parts of the West Bank and poured hundreds of thousands of settlers into our territory. In 1974, 50 years ago, the General Assembly reaffirmed the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people in Palestine, including the right to self-determination without external interference, the right to national independence and sovereignty, as well as the inalienable right of the Palestinians to return to their homes and property from which they have been displaced and uprooted, and called for their return. Instead, Israel denied the existence of the Palestinian people. The United Nations has consistently reiterated these calls, yet Israel has consistently rejected them, entrenching its violations rather than ending them. So here we are. Though the law is absolutely clear, it is being trampled. Without accountability, there is no justice, and without justice, there can be no peace. Israel must be made to bear the consequences of its illegal conduct rather than reap the benefits. After 75 years, justice can no longer wait for the day Israel has an epiphany and suddenly decides to reverse course and commit to the law and UN resolutions. Our journey in the search for justice has brought us before you, before the International Court of Justice, following the General Assembly's decision to seek your guidance. We call on you to confirm that Israeli's presence in the occupied Palestinian territory is illegal. I repeat, it is illegal. That the presence of its occupation forces and settlers is illegal, and that its occupation must thus come to an immediate, complete, and unconditional end. I repeat, an immediate, complete, and unconditional end. This occupation has served as cover for Israelis' colonial designs, the acquisition of Palestinian territory by force. In 1980, the Security Council reaffirmed the overriding necessity to end the prolonged occupation of Arab territories occupied by Israel since 1967, including Jerusalem. If the occupation was deemed prolonged in 1980, how should it be characterized today, nearly 45 years later? I repeat, If the occupation was deemed prolonged in 1980, how should it be characterized today, nearly 45 years later? And if it was an overriding necessity to end it then, what exactly is it now, I ask you? Mr. President, members of the court, the United Nations admitted Israel in 1949. 75 years later, Palestine is yet to be admitted as full member of the United Nations. I sat in the General Assembly next to representatives of liberation movements, next to the ANC and SWAPO. We stood side by side with them as they achieved their independence and took their rightful places among the community of nations. They cannot accept that the Palestinian people are left behind any longer, indefinitely denied their innate rights. That is why many of those states will appear before this court in the coming days. Mr. President, members of the court, based on the UN record, you should have no difficulty arriving at the conclusion that the occupation is prolonged, that Palestinian territory has been annexed, that our self-determination has been denied, and that the people of Palestine have been subjected to systematic racial discrimination. The occupation itself cannot be distinguished from these breaches. They are not merely the result of the occupation, but are rather the foundation upon which the occupation rests. Rooted in the singular unlawful goal of maintaining permanent Israeli dominance over the occupied Palestinian territory and relegating the Palestinians it has not been able to displace to inferior status in their own land, in perpetuity, deprived of their inalienable rights. A finding from this distinguished court that the occupation is illegal and drawing the legal consequences from this determination would contribute to bringing it to an immediate end, paving the way to just and lasting peace. In closing, honorable judges, the State of Palestine appeals to this court to guide the international community in upholding international law, ending injustice, and achieving a just and lasting peace, to guide us towards a future in which Palestinian children are treated as children. Not as demographic threat, in which the identity of the group to which we belong does not diminish the human rights to which we are all entitled. A future in which no Palestinian and no Israelis is killed. A future in which two states live side by side in peace and security. The Palestinian people only demand respect for their rights. They ask for nothing more. They cannot accept nothing less and nothing else. The future of freedom, justice, and peace can begin here and now. It is within your power to give the clearest statement possible on what the law is, what it requires, and what it means in practice for all members of the United Nations. We trust in your wisdom, your fairness, and your dedication to justice and the rule of law. And I thank you very much, Mr. President.
Riyad Mansour is the State of Palestine's ambassador to the United Nations. He was speaking on February 19th, on the first day of hearings at the International Court of Justice in The Hague regarding the legal consequences of Israel's 57-year occupation and effective annexation of the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza. The United Nations Supreme Judicial Body will be issuing an advisory opinion on this matter in response to a request from the UN General Assembly late last year, sometime before the end of this year. You also heard Youssef Najjare, a Palestinian molecular pharmacologist and chemist, and a good friend of the GPM. For today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and Canada's Harbinger Media Network. Wherever or however you're listening, reading, or watching, please help us make the GPM happen. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. By the way, I've said it before and I'll say it again. The guy behind this guitar is Dan Weisenberger. Thanks for your brilliant instrumental themes, Dan. I'm Dave Kattenberg. Over and out. For now.
Did you know that BC's natural ecosystem is one of the most biologically diverse regions in Canada? Indigenous communities have stewarded these lands for millennia and maintained a significant relationship with the natural world. Many of their practices, such as sustainable resource management and knowledge of ecological environments, continues to shape conservation efforts in this province. Come to the next Science World Spotlight on Wednesday, June 19th, between 6 and 9:30 p.m. for a thought-provoking panel discussion on the connections between Indigenous worldviews and contemporary environmental challenges. Head over to ScienceWorld's website to find out more.